KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right.
Oh, I love the Matthew McConaughey.
Back to the True Well Show, your favorite Tuesday you've had all week, and I am stoked to be back in the studio.
Right.
Because I'm no longer in an undisclosed location. I'm here in the studio. Woohoo!
Which way, I guess we could say it's disclosed.
If you have Google, you can look it up.
We're
at the station. Okay. Yeah. So I'm your host, David Littlejohn. In studio joining me, of course,
is Katie Shook.
And
so, David, where were you?
I was in Myrtle Beach, North Myrtle Beach, because there's actually Myrtle Beach and North Myrtle Beach. They're two separate locations in South Carolina.
Yes.
I was enjoying a family visit. My family went out, and then a few days later, one of my brothers and his kids came out. We all got together with my father, and so it was a big group of us. There was 13 in the group in total.
That's a good group.
Yeah. You know, my family's a contingent of 5. My brother's family's a contingent of 6. So 13. So I guess
I would hate to see the two of you going anywhere to eat. Like, they would watch you guys walk in with all those kids and be like, and we're definitely charging the gratuity on this one.
Yeah. So we didn't do a bunch of eating out because it's complicated. And, you know, with COVID density, they don't really, you know, they don't want big groups and tables, that kind of thing. So it made for a complex
Well, and what did you say? There was like 6 kids under a certain age or something, or 7 kids under 9 and under?
Four of them were 5.
Under 5? Yeah.
Or under.
Yeah.
So we had 2 3-year-olds, 2 5-year-olds, because the 5-year-olds are cousins, but the 2 3-year-olds are twins.
Twins, right.
And then we had 7, 9, and 12.
Yeah, it's a lot of kids. A
lot of kids. Although I will say that, you know, the 12-year-old's, you know, 12 going on 25, so
yeah.
I don't know how.
Mini adult?
And eats like an adult now, so I guess I'm like, well, just start paying taxes and we're there.
Oh, so, it feels like it, doesn't it, now?
Anyhow, it was a great trip. We did the usual, right? So had a hurricane on the trip.
David likes to take natural disasters with him. He kind of packs them in the front pocket of his suitcase.
Yeah.
You know, at one point he did text me and goes, guess what? You're going to laugh. What's up? There's a hurricane that's supposed to hit. And I'm like, go figure. Really? Like, does that have to follow you?
It follows me everywhere.
Everywhere.
So I've been to Myrtle Beach several times. I've had multiple hurricanes. I've had an evacuation. I remember going to Alabama one time. It actually was downgraded to a tropical storm. But where we were staying was on an earthen dammed lake, and the dam broke. And everything flooded there. We had to be evacuated from that.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but I'm just, you know, it's like, oh, the little black cloud is following me around the country.
So this will sound weird, but in college, I had an opportunity to go to Bangladesh, and we had a typhoon, which is their version when we were there. We have family in Hawaii, went to visit there and had a hurricane come to Hawaii.
Right. So, and most of the time, by the way, you pretty much go unscathed. Like, it kind of either goes around you or, like, gently crawls by you. Like, it's never like you're in this massive
hotel-destroying thing. So we're on the 6th floor. My dad lives on the 6th floor of an oceanfront building. And we sat and watched the storm. Even went out in the eye of the storm. That was kind of novel, right? But we watched the storm, and we thought, well, this is no big deal. 3 miles north of us. 100-mile-an-hour winds that went through and broke all kinds of stuff, caused millions of dollars in damage. And where we were, it, like, blew a chair over.
That's
like
crazy.
Out by the pool.
Like 3 miles, which is not that far.
Oh, we walked that. Like, we were walking up there by day. We covered, you know, I probably averaged 7-8 miles a day of just walking on the beach and hanging out. I got the sunburn to prove it.
So what David is really telling you is he had a lot of very good True Wealth moments, right? Created a lot of memories with a lot of generations.
Yep.
That was awesome.
It was really rewarding. We did fly. We wore the masks. We did all the stuff. Felt safe. Didn't feel, you know, it was not a miserable experience.
How was it going through the airports? Anything like, different other than just more space?
Yeah, lower density in general. There just are fewer people, and because there are fewer people traveling. But it was different. So we did a trip earlier to Texas, and the airports were shut down. There was no restaurants or anything. It was actually quite inconvenient. You guys will laugh. This was not a True Wealth moment. We were connecting through Las Vegas. Only one newsstand was open. So this one, you just have to share. Like a regular bag of M&Ms. What does the airport charge for a bag of M&Ms?
Well, it depends on the bag, but I would say like
peanut
three.
M&Ms. Like
three,
regular size.
Like $3 or $4.
Yeah, 14.
What?
$14.
$14 for a bag of M&Ms.
Yeah. I mean, if it weren't for the fact that they were just the messenger, I wanted to like punch the
clerk
cashier
and just be like, seriously?
Why would you even be here for that, you extortionist? But, you know, they're just doing their job. So I needed to figure out who's in charge of the pricing.
$14 for a bag of M&Ms?
Oh, it was extortion. It was horrible. So anyway, we didn't buy the M&Ms. But nevertheless, this last trip, and we connected from Portland through Atlanta, and we had Chick-fil-A, and it was fine. Everything was great. So it was a really good travel experience, and we had we flew on Delta. Fantastic experience.
Do you know are the airlines now providing more snack meals because of it? Like, I'm just curious about traveling in general,
well,
just because
they are,
obviously I still want to go somewhere.
Just, I think what they were handing out was like this little plastic bag that had preset. They had like a small bottle of water, you know, like the 6 ounces or whatever, mm-hmm. and it had a couple of snacks, so like some peanuts or almonds, probably not peanuts. I think it was almonds, or like one time I had like a little biscuit.
They're usually
cookie
like pretzels
or
something that are not nuts because people
yeah.
have nut allergies.
Yeah.
But they were handing them to you as you got on the plane?
No, they actually did the service down the aisle.
Oh, okay.
And brought them to us. I mean, it was a 5.5 hour flight, so they're going to, I think the flight attendants would get bored too. They're like, let's go do something.
Yeah, please give us a job.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm
but
just curious
no
because
sodas.
We talked about.
Yeah, no soda. You had to get, it's just, well, here's the water. That's what you get.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Supply chain?
No, I think it's just a safety protocol. They just didn't want to be handling stuff, so they could just bag
oh,
it all
Oh, because they usually
and...
do have the large bottles. Although, depending on which airline you fly on, a lot of times I pre-purchase meals or pre-purchase, like, some of the stuff, so
yeah,
it's
yeah, there was none of that
easy.
Going on. So.
But, well, good. We're glad you're back. I'm glad
yeah,
you're back.
I'm glad to be back.
And by the way, I want to point out, since I have done the last 2 weeks shows on businesses, small businesses, which we're still considered a small business, even though we're growing leaps
yep.
and bounds, this is a testament a little bit to small businesses, right? Your business has now grown to the point where you can actually take a 2 week vacation and not be working the whole vacation.
Right. That it's really significant. This is, so let's talk for a moment. This is, I guess, an entrepreneur, you know, interjection, if
right.
you will. A lot of people that start businesses, I mean, a bunch of our listeners, right? I realize you're not business owners, and so this is
well they could be you don't know
you might be I mean
you
some there are definitely some listeners that are or that are considering it, and so there's this culture in the entrepreneurial landscape where a lot of the time early on the entrepreneur, you know, you wear every hat, you do it all,
right? Everything,
because you have to,
including cleaning the toilets, like
yes.
you do everything.
The joke is you're the chief cook and bottle washer,
right?
So you're doing everything, and it's hard if you're really good at, say, making a widget to then get out of making the widget because you have to manage an organization with people making the widget and you're having to manage people. And you get outside of what maybe your initial passion was.
Right.
I'm sort of fortunate because as much as I just love people.
You are a people person.
I am the last person to leave the party unless my wife is like, we got to go. Because I love people. I love.
Me too.
Love
I'm the one with
the
like my eyes half closed, don't want to talk.
Yeah.
Totally.
I draw energy from people.
True.
And so I can just hang out. As soon as the crowd disperses, and I'm like, oh man, I'm tired. Right.
Right.
But
right.
I am a true extrovert.
True.
Like, that's just who I am. So I love people, and I love the field of finance, and I love teaching and helping people to achieve goals. So it's always been fun to do the planning and the investing and so forth. But I also love the entrepreneurial vision process and seeing like the path of growth for an organization and how they mature. And yeah, I've been doing this 20 years.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people say, ah, 20 years. No, literally 20 years. I started my career in insurance. It was still 1999 when I got started.
So nuts.
And it was, you know, I was just graduating from college. So 20 years later, in fact, September will be the sort of the unofficial anniversary. That's when the paperwork was drawn up for Little John Financial.
Aww.
Right?
And you know, if you technically started in 99, you could say you've been doing it for 3 decades. Because you've been in 3 decades.
Yeah, I guess I could. That's the Vince Carter argument. He had been in 3 decades in the NBA.
Right.
So
that's why I'm bringing it up. It's kind of funny. Okay. Yes. So
anyhow, or four, actually.
Four.
Right? Because he'd been in the 90s, the 2010s, the 2010s, and then the 2020.
Yeah.
So I could say I'm almost in 4 decades
now. I know. Isn't that crazy? You're like, no, I'm not that old.
Like, whoa, how'd that work out? Yeah, just fortunate timing. So anyhow, I talking about the pathway of growth as entrepreneurs is really fun. One of the things that was impressed upon me at some point in the development is if you really want to be successful, you have to make yourself replaceable. Listen to that again. If you really want to be successful, you have to make yourself replaceable.
Right.
That is tremendously counterintuitive.
Right, because we've even talked about on the show as an employee, like, yeah.
If you want to be more valuable as an employee, make yourself irreplaceable.
But you're saying it's the opposite for, as an owner and entrepreneur. Like, if you want to become more successful, because basically what you're saying is you then have to delegate your work away to other people.
Yeah, the question of why. Why do you want to be replaceable? Weird question, right? Why don't we, I'll do this. Let's take a break, and I'm going to tackle, this seems weird, and then we'll talk about why it's relevant to investing as well, right? So we'll bring it all home. But why should an entrepreneur make themselves replaceable? That and more when we come back. This is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shuck.
You're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show.
Oh, yay, starting to jingle. We're going to do it when, maybe for Halloween.
What?
I don't know. We can do like some fun little jingle. I don't know.
I do not know how to make it into a jingle.
Don't either.
I want to take a poll. You know, I've wondered, is the True Wealth Show, is it the right name for it?
That's the poll.
Well, yeah, is that the right name or should it? Because we've always wondered about, you know, it's Little John Financial, right?
It could be the Little John. It could just be the Little John Financial Show.
Yeah.
But that sounds very...
less true wealthy.
Yeah. More egotistical.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we decided to name it after you.
And that's the funny thing is it's never intended to be...
It's not really about your ego, though.
No.
And we do. And I think we do bring it back to true wealth moments frequently. So I don't feel like it's a bad name for the show. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know if we had named it. Well, you guys can give your opinion if you want. You can go on Facebook on our Little John Facebook page and let us know. Should we change the name of the show?
Yeah.
And if so, throw out some ideas of what you think it should be called.
Yeah. Well, yeah. PG ideas. Come on now.
Yeah. Be nice. Be nice.
All right. We were talking at the break. And remember, this stuff gets podcasted. So go check out the podcast, also available on the webpage, which is littlejohnfs, because financial services, right, .com.
Right.
So go to littlejohnfs.com, and you can check out, we got a bunch of these things on podcast. I know, like, I still got to listen to the last couple of weeks.
I know.
Right? Because you had some fun guests on. Was it fun doing the show with Mom?
It is, although it's so hard, because I just adore my mother so much. So I'm like, I love you, Mom. Like, I just... kept feeling like I needed to tell the world, even though everybody's like, yeah, we got it. You love your mother.
We
get it. It's nepotistic. All right. No, really not at all. She inspires me as a businesswoman. Mm-hmm.
She's done a bunch of entrepreneurial ventures too.
Very entrepreneurial, and I'm greatly appreciate just her grooming me as a child. You know, it's amazing.
Me too.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, David takes advantage of it very well. No, it's funny to me. Even today. So today we were. I can't believe I've been with going on like 7 years now. Like we're working on our seventh year. We've been together. Over
in
6 years
April,
now.
It was we finished 6 years in April because you were hired in 2014. April 2014.
It was 2013. Yeah. It's, I know. Blah, 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 blah. I know. It just, it goes by so fast. But anyway, so David and I were talking today, and it's fascinating, like, the things I gravitate towards. The you know, some of it's personality. Some of it's just, you know, I've been groomed by an entrepreneurial mother. And I was kind of hoping to spread those things to other entrepreneurs. I know there's a lot of people that listen that are either small business owners, entrepreneurs, or maybe inspire to be an entrepreneur one day. Like right now, a lot of, not a lot, I don't know, that's a big word. People are considering, some people are considering career changes, right? COVID's either.
Because you have to, got it.
Some people, because they have to, or other people are like, well, I've realized I'm not really in love with my job. Maybe now's a good time to search while I can, or, you know, I mean, who knows, right? And some people are kind of wondering if they have a job to go back to.
True.
So it's, you know, if you're considering being an entrepreneur, then the question is to kind of ask yourself, do you want to do that? And you were talking about Widget. I think a lot of people get started because they're like, I know how to do my job really well, and I can get paid more if I do it by myself. Could be true. Yeah. But raising an organization is not the same as you being really good at building a widget. They are two totally different things. And I think sometimes that's when entrepreneurs get in hot water.
Yeah. Well, it's the, like, the inventor that doesn't know how to run the business. They can invent a thing, but then how do you get it to market and market it and get it done so that people get the thing?
Well,
that's
and
a whole different animal.
And I've heard from business owners and some reading and stuff like that is that, you know, a lot of times when you have a great employee, they get promoted to a manager because you're like, oh, they're such a great employee. They may not make a great manager. They may not know how to manage people.
Oh, yeah.
Just
lots
because there's
lots of books about that too.
Right?
Like taking the top salesperson and making them the manager, and you go, but you just took them out of their sort of zone of genius and turned them into something that they weren't awesome at.
Okay, expand on that, because we were talking about that today. Zone of genius. What does that mean?
Okay, so I'm gonna we have to still answer the other question,
yes.
Right? Why entrepreneurs need to be replaceable.
Yes.
But I'll answer the zone of genius question because you asked it first.
Okay.
And because, you know, we took a break, but I'm not going to leave you guys hanging on that one. So the zone of genius is a term, and now I got to remember the title of the book, right? I'm going to look this up because I have the internet. So zone of genius came from, I'll lose. I'll have to
Anyway, the
idea
quick.
Is that we all have different strengths. Some things we just do because we're capable. Other things that we do because we're actually good at it, right? You might be really talented at something, but then some things you're just uniquely gifted and it is your sweet spot.
Right.
Okay.
Like you thrive in that environment or in that role.
And when you get into your zone of genius, you're really doing your highest value stuff. The problem is for many business owners, small business in particular, folks get stuck working in their, call it a zone of competency or something similar, where you're very good at it, but it's not really your genius. Other people could do what you're doing, but you just don't have them on, around you. So you're sort of forced to work in that role, and it prevents you from getting to the real pinnacle of your effectiveness. And that is it's a bit of a trap, right? And it's also, I'll call it the entrepreneur's conundrum. You know, you need to grow, but you don't have the resources to grow yet.
But without the extra help, then you don't grow
break out of this feedback loop? Because I need more resources to break out of the feedback loop, but I can't break out of the feedback loop because I don't have the resources. So people sort of get stuck on the treadmill, and it's a tough place to be. And if you think about advice from entrepreneurs, or certainly if I think about advice I've received from other entrepreneurs, they routinely say this: I wish I would have done X sooner, right? I wish that I would have hired my first person. I wish I would have done this other decision where I was worried about it, but I didn't make the decision earlier because of this fear that I had in the way.
Right.
Now, let's be very clear here. That is a lot like a stock trader only talking about their winning trades. Like, you've just talked to somebody that is successful talking about, I wish I would have done anything sooner because I could have been further. That's what they're thinking. Doing it sooner doesn't mean for sure that it would have made them successful.
I wish I would have bought Tesla when it was at $50 a share.
Yeah.
And not
$900.
$1,400. See? $50
or whatever it is now. It was really high.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. We can find out because, again, internet.
Okay. So why? We were talking about being
$1,375.
Oh, replaceable versus, like, you want to make yourself replaceable.
Yes.
And are you replaceable?
Parts.
Okay.
So here's the thing about the feedback loop, right? When we're saying you need the resources to break out, but you don't have the resources to break out. So you can't get to the resources because you're stuck in the loop.
Okay.
And you need the resources to get out of the loop. So you're like, well, great. I have to keep doing what I do to stay here. But it's not enough to get escape velocity.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. So the idea here, and this is where it's a lot of entrepreneurs think, well, I'm the value, so I need to just figure out a way to charge more for what I do. Okay, let's call that the one-to-one model. Okay?
Okay.
Like an attorney gets one client at a time that they can spend their time on, right? You know, unless it's a class action lawsuit, I suppose. But
it's still one thing at a time.
So the talent level and their speed and efficiency and so forth essentially is you're trading your time for money. And there are lots of professions. I mean, plumbers,
doctors,
tradesmen. You know, how much can I get paid per unit of labor? Like, how much per hour can I charge? And the market will bear it. That's sort of how the pricing is derived. You know, if an attorney's talented enough to charge $1,000 an hour and people are willing to pay it, then good, charge $1,000 an hour. That's how that works. If they're not talented enough, or if they can't find people willing to pay it, then the supply and demand curve will change the price. So that model is really hard to scale because you're the provider and you have to be face-to-face with the client. So what can that model do? You can put support staff around you that can do all of the things that are not you sitting in front of the client.
Which a lot of them do.
Yes.
So hence paralegals and all sorts of other.
They're not answering their phones. They're not doing the collecting the mail or sending letters and follow-ups,
right,
or managing the calendar or anything. All they do is they meet with people all day. Think about your doctors. They have a staff of people that help run the organization. So the doctor is focused doing their highest value event.
Right.
Okay. And so that's the idea, though, is if you are going to run a company that is scalable, meaning it can grow, you will need to make yourself replaceable. So for Little John Financial, it can't be about David. It's about our team. And I use that. I've used the royal we since I was in an office by myself. Thought about, we're building an organization together. There's a culture and a mission, and people work as a team to serve our clients.
Okay. Now, David, since we've been talking about small businesses, has your business model changed?
Sure.
Has it changed since COVID?
Some.
Okay. So, and the reason I'm bringing that up is to let you know, like, even though you may have a plan, plans change.
Right.
Right. And entrepreneurs need to change their plan from time to time,
change,
too.
Rules change. Demographics change. There's always change. So you're always evolving with the conditions. And absolutely, we do that. The question, though, is about making yourself replaceable. The idea is for me to train everybody else in the organization to be able to do different parts of my job so that I can get focused more and more on getting into the zone of genius and helping everybody else on the team find their zone of genius. If we're all working in our sweet spot, the productivity is magnified and then the quality of service to our customers is elevated. So that's the concept, is if you're retired listening to this, you can just kind of look back and wonder what it would have been like. But if you're still working, imagine if you found a place where you didn't hate going to work, you loved it. And what you were doing brought you joy. And it was like you wanted to go there. You woke up in the morning and said,
excitement.
I'm going to go do this because it's what I love doing.
Right.
Now imagine if everybody got to do that.
Oh, it'd be so amazing. The world would be a happier place.
What would our economy look like if everybody found that there was something that they could get paid for that they loved doing?
We'd have a thriving economy.
It would be pretty exceptional. Now, you know, this is sort of a utopian concept. I don't believe it really exists because, you know, none of us stays happy all the time. Things go wrong and, you know, our taste changes. It's, you know, what I love today, you know, there was a time when I thought I wanted to be like a lazy boy video game tester. Like, that would be so awesome. I just want to sit in recliners and play video games. Can I do that for a living?
Yeah, I can do that for 15. About 3 hours, and then I'm like, and I'm done here.
And today I'm like, that sounds horrible.
There was a moment I was like, man, cross-country driver sounds awesome, because then I get to see the world. And then I drove up to Portland and back in one day and went, nope, there's enough of that for me. I couldn't do that every day. So, yeah, I know. Sometimes thinking about it is much better than actually doing it.
Yep, studies around that, too.
Oh, lots of them.
Yeah, so... anyhow, again, this concept, though, is, you know, when you're the employee, you want to demonstrate this exceptional value to your employer, because there's this sort of unwritten law. This came from a book that was written years ago by Napoleon Hill called Think and Grow Rich. But it's the law of compensation. The law of compensation is that no work goes uncompensated. Somebody that does more than is required and goes the extra mile either catches the attention of the employer and ultimately is paid more for their skills. So it is rewarded ultimately because you've invested and that investment pays off. But if it doesn't pay off with that employer, guess what?
It'll pay off with another one. The best somebody else will notice too.
You know
too.
What? The easiest way to get a great job is to already have a job and do well at it, because that's what people get poached.
They
right?
do.
It's a funny reality, but employers love the idea that I'm recruiting somebody else that I already know is a great employee. So it's not a wild card. Look, they're already holding a job down and reliable and doing all those things. Let's get them.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens a lot, is people get recruited away. To this day, I still get solicitations from headhunters to see if I would like to go work somewhere. And I always chuckle and go, well, I don't know if the boss is cool with that.
Let me see. Let me have a meeting with myself. Does this work out for me?
And they're like, well, you know, your boss doesn't have to know. And I'm like, oh, he'll know.
That's actually kind of funny. Thank you. You're like, did you not see the name on the door?
Oh, he'll know.
Yeah. It's not my father, by the way. It's me. Yeah.
So
anyway, that's interesting you say that. I do get stuff like that from LinkedIn and solicitations, like, hey, would you be interested in this? And I was like, no. But
it happens. But that's the law of compensation. It's just be worth it and people will find you. And being worth it is lots of things. It's not just because you're really good at something. Right? That's not what makes a good employee is not because you're the best at doing the thing. It's because you may be the best at doing the thing, but we can also count on you to show up when you're supposed to and do the thing consistently and sort of be the team player that organization needs.
Right.
That's what makes it valuable. Because just I always think, like, the best professional athletes can be prima donnas and they're impossible to work with. And you're like, that's toxic to the culture of the team. So, you know, you can bring in a really talented player that doesn't actually make the team win. So it's about being the team player that the team needs. But there you go. So anyway, there's your why you need to be but you know, that's why you become irreplaceable as an employee, but you become replaceable as an employer, because what you're really looking for is ways to
not micromanage everything,
get everybody else and
leverage more.
Right. I mean, I'm not worried about losing my job as the boss because, you know, I'm the one that has the hiring and firing decisions ultimately.
Right.
Right. And the team gets input, but ultimately the buck stops somewhere. And that's different in the private sector than the public sector, where there's contracts and, you know, maybe union influence and other things that change that dynamic a lot.
Right.
You know, a lot of different rules. And there are certainly employment rules, don't get me wrong. But for the private sector, I'm saying. But the point is that by helping bring other people in around me that are more skilled than I am, it increases the efficiency of the entire team. Like, we all win more. That person that's more talented is going to be better compensated. The organization will thrive more. So everybody will
more
be
work,
better
more
for
business,
it.
More and, everything. And there's the value, more to go around.
Yeah, and the value of the business increases. And so I'm not diminishing myself. It's actually increasing everyone's value by getting the right players on the team. So you make yourself replaceable by training others to be superior to what you do, and then the value of the organization thrives. And you get a lot more cultural buy-in from your people.
True.
Right?
True.
So that's the thing. And who does it ultimately benefit in our world?
You.
Well, I mean, it ultimately
benefits
me.
As a business, as an organization.
So I say, like, internally, I said our most important client is our own team, because if the team is really taking care of each other, then our clients get really good service.
True, they do.
And we don't get to have a business unless we have clients. And so we got to find a way to make the experience for our clients just outstanding.
Oh, I love it. All right.
So there you go.
So what does that mean for you as an investor? We're going to talk about it.
Well, you know, we'll take a break. When we come back, I think we're going to shift gears a little bit. You know, some news came out about the investments. Markets kind of dropped late in the day. I don't know if anybody watched that. But
a few of you might have.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about that too. We had our entrepreneur thing. Now we got to talk about, you know, actual investing. That and more when we come back. This is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Katie Shook.
And we are having a great time.
You are blowing up today.
Blowing up.
I keep hearing your phone go, Linda. It's like your little ding ding.
Oh, I'll take the sound off because it is.
Hey, you call me out on it when my phone chimes in the middle of the show.
No, your phone rings. You like get a doggone phone call, be like, I'm sorry, do I need to order a pizza or something?
Shush. Domino's.
All right, so we're going to shift gears. If you're just joining us, you can check out the podcast. It's at littlejohnfs.com. We've been talking a lot about entrepreneurs, but I do want to take a few minutes and some of the time remaining that we have on the show today
To talk about the markets. So what is the market doing right now?
So first of all, backdrop, it's a fun day to talk because, you know, I took 2 weeks basically out of the office. And I didn't fully unplug, but I went to the other side of the country. I flew across the country. It was a fun way to get the finger on the pulse of some other areas. And
true.
Get a sense of some of how the country is responding that's different. Because, you know, we're in rural Oregon, which is a relatively blue state in the cities and a red state outside the cities. Well, and it's a low population density.
I would go more with that. It's a low population density in general. Oregon itself is outside of, like, Portland.
Well, outside of the I-5 corridor for cities with more than 100,000 people in it.
Right. Like, it's, right. I mean, we, yeah, we're.
You know, that are left-handed or, I don't know, weird demographics. But you get the idea that we all know what we're talking about and our perspective here. And, of course, there's no shortage of opinion these days about, you know, what's going on with the
politics,
world, what's wrong with the
COVID,
world.
COVID, meth, yes. Gators.
So, yeah, whales in the Amazon.
What?
Oh, yeah, it's a
Is
thing.
Is that a new thing now?
It's a thing. Check it out. So,
is that the August thing, whales in the Amazon?
There was a, they found a whale in, like, in the jungle. I mean, not way, but, you know, far enough in them that you're like, how did that happen? So it was weird.
That was a bet lost at sea. I could do it. You watch.
I know. Here, hold my whale. Like, what? So anyhow.
Okay.
So,
So what news? Sorry, I know it's my fault. I get him sidetracked. What news came out today that affected the markets?
Okay. So the whole backdrop is that people are interested. I have this question often now. Often people are asking me, what do you think the election means for the markets? And there's still a lot of people that are sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop, if you will. Is the market going to collapse? Now, let me be very clear here. I don't know the answer. Like, it's an unknowable. We can all make predictions. We can talk about our financial modeling. And what we'll know is after the fact, the person that guessed right and had the most rational logic for it will be the one that people say, see how smart they were?
Right.
But at this point, it's still a guess. I know a few things that are fun about Tuesdays. So first of all, our investment committee met this morning.
Okay.
And so we reviewed the fundamental backdrop of the markets. We looked at sort of where money was flowing, the strength in different sectors and how they're changing over time, the strength of the U.S. dollar. We look at things like the call up to put ratios within the marketplace. So who's buying insurance for the market to go up or to go down, and how are they hedging? So we go through a lot of data. And then we look at the behavior of the markets and how price is changing in the marketplace. And we've had, until today, the S&P 500 had been on like a 9-day win streak.
I was going to say, it was probably doing pretty good.
Yes, it was doing really well. We've almost, again, up until today's sort of pullback, we're nearly at all-time highs.
Yay!
Okay. And then late in the market session, so late in the afternoon on the East Coast, we had the announcement of Joe Biden's running mate. And then the markets precipitously declined.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. So they gave up anywhere from 1% to 2% in short order. His Biden's announcement was Kamala Harris as his vice presidential running mate. She is an African-American woman, an attorney, and has largely been politically very savvy. She's been a climber. So I'm not making judgment calls about
or telling you who
Kamala
to vote for.
Harris or Joe Biden or Trump or anything else. What I'm telling you is what the market told us today, which is following that announcement, stocks pulled back in price and big tech was one of the biggest hit.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So the
question, they have a lot of policy around big tech?
They have one big elephant in the room, which is tax policy, okay? And the Biden tax policy is a really interesting one. A lot of what he has sort of indicated on his platform, and many don't believe that it will be this aggressive, but there's a lot of political science about how to capture votes right now.
Right.
Okay, and so Biden, by aligning with an African-American woman, is appealing to a particular slice of voters.
Okay.
Right. And then his tax policy was one that was sort of formulated in part with some of what Bernie Sanders was proposing. So it's a more aggressive tax structure. It involves higher taxes on higher earners. But the one that has my attention is that there's potentially some significant changes to capital gains taxes. So remember, capital gains taxes are not income. That is the one that is not spoken about frequently and in political circles, because we know that there are some people. I'm not going to call out a name, but I'm going to make a joke about it, because as we were walking in the station, we had some people that were trying to decide who they were going to vote for president based on how attractive the first lady will be.
Oh, goodness.
And I'm thinking, okay, this is a terrible
methodology. That was the conversation.
This is a terrible methodology. And if this is your methodology, you're a terrible person. So
didn't they do that, oddly enough, with like when Bill Clinton ran, wasn't it? It was like, oh, he's cuter than the other guy thing.
I'm sure that I'm teasing to a little bit.
Some
but at
extent.
The same time, folks will make their judgment call for lots of reasons. But what the market was telling us is if the Biden camp were to get elected, see, Kamala Harris politically is further left than Biden has been historically.
Right.
And so what it is sort of a tip of the hat. The running mate is saying, we're going to run on a more left-leaning progressive platform. And if elected, we one of the things on their platform is much more aggressive taxes on capital gains. Well, the stock market is very interested in capital gains tax.
Yeah.
Very interested. In fact, I had a very interesting conversation with somebody about what does the capital gains tax mean, because I want to leave some people with a thought here. And this thought, it's not political, it's economic. But people have routinely said, well, the rich need to pay their fair share, and that if we tax the rich more, then we would be able to afford more services. So I'm not going to dispute that if taxing the rich, we were able to collect more revenue, that we couldn't do more, because there's a tremendous amount of wealth concentrated in just a handful of hands. But I think there's some unintended consequences that are worth discussing after the last break.
There you go. I was waiting for it.
Yeah. So stick around and we'll come back. And like, really, if you want to have like an aha moment about unintended consequences of tax policy, the market just told us something today. And I want to break that down in our last segment. But stick around. We got to take our last break. So we'll be right back. This is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome back to the home stretch of
the True Wealth Radio Show. Oh, my voice is so raspy right now. Those darn allergies this time of year.
Really?
Makes me really froggy.
It's like, it's her lingerie voice. It's the raspy
Is that what
one,
it is?
Right?
Like, my Barry White voice.
This is my late night phone call voice. Like, okay.
my thyroid's having issues voice.
<You're> like, wow. So we were talking about what the market showed us, and there's a little conjecture in what I'm sharing here, but I just want to give folks a final thought before we end the program today on
capital gains, because you're talking about taxes and capital gains.
Well, and the unintended consequence when people say, well, we just need to tax billionaires. And here's what I think folks miss. Most of a billionaire's net worth is typically illiquid, meaning it's tied up in
ownership
assets.
Of things.
So like Jeff Bezos is I believe the world's richest man right now. He owns, I think, 14% of Amazon. Okay. So Amazon, when you own 14% of a company that's got $1 trillion market cap, you're a billionaire, right?
Right.
And
but that
like
doesn't
a
mean
multi-billionaire.
He has a, but that doesn't mean he has $1 billion in
well,
cash in a vault.
But I want you to think about, like, let's say that he's worth $100 billion. And people say, that's ridiculous. We should just tax him at 20%. You know, everybody else is paying. Or, well, let's say he should be taxed at the highest rate, right? And the highest rate in the Biden tax plan is currently 39%, as I understand it. It's currently 37%.
It's almost half.
But that's 39%.
It's a third. It's over a third, yeah.
Well, first and foremost, Jeff Bezos has owned his Amazon stock for decades. So it's not income taxes that's going to get him. I don't know if Jeff Bezos even takes an income, right? I mean, he probably gets some money in income, and he pays income taxes like everybody else does. But as a percentage of his net worth, you don't get to tax the Amazon stock unless he sells it.
Right.
But if you say, no, he has to pay the tax just for owning it.
Ooh, that's okay? A slippery slope.
So that, and people will say, well, you know, we make people pay property taxes for living somewhere. It's like, well, that is true. But think about the unintended consequence of saying, well, he's going to have to pay, let's just say, 39% on his Amazon stock because he's worth $100 billion. He's going to have to sell basically 40% of his stock. So go from a 14% owner to, what, 8% or something. When he does that, he will flood the market with Amazon stock,
which will drive the price down,
which will collapse the price. If you sell, if 8% of the companies all of a sudden sold, then you could have arguably, you know, the Amazon could go from 3,000 a share to, it could maybe it could drop 20%, right? So all of a sudden it's down to what, 2,400 a share or something like that. If that's the case, then not only did Jeff Bezos get hammered, but every Amazon shareholder, which is also government pensions. And now you have collapsed a giant underpinning of the economy.
Right.
And the unintended consequence ripples through and damages everybody.
Right. And if it's on.
And then the next year, if you're going to tax them again, you're going to force them to sell again. And what you're going to do is you're going to force people out of ownership.
And then people won't want to own stuff.
Well, then nobody will, right? Because who's the owner? If every year you have to sell it, you'll run out of buyers. Eventually, if every year I'm forced to sell it, where's the new buyer come from?
Right. Well, it's passing for them, it's going to pass for other people that own the company too. So like if you're doing it based on ownership and not based on sale.
Right. And so if somebody out there saying, well, then don't do it that high. Make it 5%.
Doesn't matter. You're still forcing people.
If you force people to liquidate assets, then you change dramatically the dynamic. And what you in effect do, and see, I make this case all the time. You don't really own your property if you have to pay property taxes on it. Because guess what? If you don't pay the taxes, they'll take it.
They'll take the house, yeah.
Yeah. So then there's no private ownership anymore. Now there's private control, but not if you're ownership. Forced to sell all the time to pay taxes, then at some point, there's not traditional private ownership either.
Right.
So the unintended consequences, I'm not suggesting the system couldn't be redesigned. What I'm saying, if you try to do it suddenly on something of that size and scale, you could break a lot of stuff, right? It's like, oh, well, that's fine. We have a car on the freeway traveling 90 miles an hour, and we need to instantly make it go 60 miles an hour. Well, what, are you going to throw a parachute out of the back? It's going to slam everybody forward when you do. It's going to break stuff. You know, you can't just downshift without breaking things sometimes.
Well, and stop voting like you're punishing the other guy.
Yeah.
What would you do if that were your money? Vote that way.
Well, I would say it's not about punishing people. It's about just better economic understanding, which is why we do this program. It's why we give so much away on our website. It's why we train people on our YouTube channel. I want you all to make good financial decisions. And I want you to understand the system.
I want you to make great financial decisions.
Yeah, make awesome decisions.
Make them better than good.
And if you need help, call us at
541-375-0898.
All right, and check out our website, littlejohnfs.com. We're out of time. Katie, thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.
Until next time, this is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.